Before we jump into today's episode, we wanted to take just a minute to share something that's important to us. Angels Among Us is an interfaith podcast. While many of our guests come from a Latter-day Saint background and may occasionally reference beliefs, experiences, or teachings that are specific to their faith, our hope is that this never becomes a barrier to anyone listening. Our mission has never been to convince anyone what to believe. Our mission is to help people feel seen, loved, and less alone. No matter your faith tradition, or even if you're still searching for what you believe, we want you to know that you are welcome here. We believe that God loves all of his children, and we believe that each of us is surrounded by help, both seen and unseen.
As you listen, you may hear perspectives or beliefs that differ from your own. If that happens, we hope you'll listen for the heart behind the message. We've been blessed to learn from people of many different faiths, backgrounds, and life experiences, and we've found that there is so much we can learn when we're willing to listen to one another's stories. One of our favorite things about this podcast is discovering that despite our differences, we often have much more in common than we realize. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being willing to learn, grow, and listen alongside of us. Now, please enjoy the show.
Why aren't you blessing me? Why? I'm a good person. I've worked hard. I've learned the language. I got both my college degrees. I got married in a temple. Why? What else do I need to do? And then this voice came very clearly saying, because you're not doing your part. But I'm here for you whenever you are. And that suddenly just turned on that light bulb. My world suddenly had little colors popping in. I started to hear sounds. I started to have some sense of smell. And it just felt like, okay, I'm ready. Tell me what to do.
Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. Brent and Michaela here as your hosts, and we are joined by Miriam Woolsey. We are excited. Miriam reached out to us. Shoot, it's been almost a couple months now, Miriam. She was in Spain for a little while and got back, and we've finally been able to connect and get her on the show. We love it when people reach out to us and tell us that they have something that they like to share. So we are excited. She's a listener. And usually when that happens too, they always know how the show goes. And so I don't have to get a ton of information. If a listener says that they have something to contribute to the show, then we pretty much just let it go. I don't have to do any background checks or anything like that. just kidding. That doesn't happen.
No.
Here. We accept everybody. So Miriam, thank you so much for reaching out to us and for joining us. We're excited to hear what you have for us. So we'll go ahead and turn it over to you. Go ahead and give a little introduction. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself. And have to throw in there that you're from Spain and that, you know, tell everybody how long you've been here and a little bit about that journey.
Yes. So my name is Miriam and I actually am from Spain, born and raised. And I moved to the United States when I was 21 years old and I was really chasing the American dream and I was so excited about it. And just a lot of experience before moving to the United States while I lived in Spain. And then while living here, I have definitely encountered many angelic experiences that have been so enriching and so just dear to my heart that it's hard to deny. It's hard to play it off. It's hard to ignore. It's real. And it has been tender mercies, one after another. And so when I had a coworker of mine share with us her link to your podcast that she did with you a few months ago, it just made me think that maybe I had something to share too and to add to whatever, you know, all the speakers were adding onto your beautiful mission. And so I thought, why not? I'm going to put myself out there. So,
well, we're thankful that you did.
Yeah, it makes us so happy.
Thank you. Yeah, so to give you a little bit of a background, I thought about this, but it'll all come together here pretty soon. But both my mom and my dad were converts to the gospel when they were both 18 years of age. And they both happened to be living in Madrid, Spain. But my dad went on to serve his first mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints way back then when there was only one mission in Spain. It was a Spain mission. And he got back and he was going to the ward in Madrid, which there was just the one. And he decided he wanted to be a Grim Marais. And so he applied to do that. He got accepted. And the day before he was to go to his final destination, I should mention that he had been in training, you know, to understand how to fulfill his new job position. He came home and he's from the Canary Islands. And my grandma, with tears in her eyes, handed him over a letter that had the church stamp on it. And when he opened it, he said, "Whoa, this is another mission call. How weird. This is for sure a mistake. This is not, I already served on my mission. There is nothing for me to do back there again." But the very next day, he phoned in into the mission home and realized that he was expected that day in the evening time, that it indeed it was another call that he hadn't processed, but that he was called back on again because of all the miracles that he was able to witness and the way the work advanced while he was a missionary there in Spain. So he went back and served. This time there were two missions. It was the Barcelona-Spain mission and the Madrid one. So he went into the Barcelona one. And it was just for 18 months to help the work speed along a bit more. And then when he got back, he met my mom. They got married in the London Temple. And they had all six children of us. I'm the oldest of six. And in Spain, that's the craziest thing because you don't have that many kids and you for sure don't belong to a non-Catholic church. And you don't not swear and you drink alcohol. And it was just a complete different lifestyle. So here in Utah would have been one more. But back in Spain and 25 years ago, it was the oddest thing you could imagine. However, I tell you this background because growing up, we would spend time together as a family during the weekends, and we would love hearing stories about my dad and his conversion stories. And a lot of the times he would share experiences where he has witnessed angelical experiences, either in dream form or where he had heard a voice when somebody obviously was not there present physically, or he had learned of all those angelical experiences from his converts and all the people that were interested in investigating the gospel during his mission. So for us, it was this really fun thing to do, to gather around and to just hear him share those experiences. So growing up, I didn't think that angels were anything out of the ordinary. In fact, I thought they were quite a normal occurrence. And I remember also being in Spain, we were pioneers, right? At one point, my dad was the branch president, and it was my big family and the two sets of missionaries and three other members, and that was it. And we would just have a lot of different investigators that we had never met come to church, and a lot of them had a lot of encounters with angels and how they were told that they needed to come and listen to the gospel and listen to these two young Americans, that whatever they were saying were true. And so every Sunday we were just excited to almost see what happened, like who was going to show up to church, who was going to share what, something out of the ordinary. And so growing up, it was just a normal occurrence. So fast forward to me being 18 years old, I go to live with my grandmother in Madrid, and I am there to study how to become a flight attendant. And I remember just to grabbing the almost the last subway of the day. And in Spain, you walk everywhere, and the public transportation is your best friend, because if you own a car, you know you're going to spend as much time trying to park the car than getting to your destination. So you know to just grab a taxi or a bus, or the subway happened to be more reliable. So I called that subway late at night, and I was trying to hurry up just because there's not a lot of people around. And from when you exit the subway to where my grandmother's flat was, it was a good 10-minute fast walk. And so I thought, all right, my plan is to exit the subway as soon as I can, to get out of the dark tunnel, go up top, and just almost run back to my grandmother's. For some reason, I was starting to feel uneasy. 5 minutes into my walk, I hear this distinct voice that said, "Turn around now." So I thought somebody was speaking to me. So I turned around and I see this man. Nothing good about that situation. He was either going to assault me or try to take my purse or something. It just felt like not safe at all. And that very same voice said, "Stomp your foot and face him up. Like, you're okay." So I did. And you have this adrenaline rush because you understand and realize that you're probably not in a great situation and there's not a lot of safety at that point. And within seconds, he ran away. And I was just like, whoa, that was so kind. And I turn around and I try to look for someone to have watched over me. Nobody. And so the next 5 minutes walking into my grandmother's flat, I'm just trying to figure out what in the world just happened. Could I have experienced my first angelical, you know, encounter? Like, what's going on? I didn't see anybody physically, but I distinctly remember hearing that voice, like if it was another human being 5 feet away from me. And so I did share it with my mom and my dad the next day, and they were just not surprised, almost if they were excited for me. It's like, oh, how awesome. That was so neat. I'm so glad. Life goes on. And I just thought to myself, what? Like, why me? I mean, I'm so grateful, but why me? Don't angels have to worry about other people that want to maybe take a huge life choice, whether to join or not the gospel, or maybe they're not in good health in the hospital and they need a big miracle or something? I just thought of myself as not really needing the help, or maybe not qualifying for that help. But it happened. And I felt that that kind of angel that warned me and helped me know how to face that danger was a guardian angel. Because as I understand it, you can have a ministering angel that maybe teaches you or helps you learn something or become aware of something. But this experience was very clearly protecting me and watching over me. So I felt that that was a guardian angel. So fast forward till I was maybe 19 years old. I put it upon myself to find out for sure if I needed to move to the United States and experience for myself all of these wonderful things that all of these missionaries that came home and my mom fed them was true. I mean, could you really drive a car by yourself when you were 16 years old? That just sounded bananas. Like, what? Who does that? And can you actually not get out of your car and have food while you're sitting inside of your car and somebody gives it to you through a window? I mean, I've seen that in movies, but is that a for real thing? So all these dances and all these fun experiences and outdoor activities and hiking and river rafting. And this is what we do on the weekends. And it's so much fun over there. And if you work hard, you make a good living for yourself. And I thought, wow, I don't even have to dig for someone that's a member of the church. Sounds like there's a ton of them out there. And I'm pretty tall myself. I'm 5'11". So I thought, well, maybe, just maybe, there's a lot more variety out there to see this for myself. And so I'm the oldest of six and I'm a girl. So that was a really tough thing to break to my family, especially my mom, because as I understand it now, being a mom, she did rely quite a bit on me to help her and to be a support to her and to just fill in the gaps where she felt short or she couldn't, you know, do. But I thought to myself, you know what? If I'm really going to find out for myself, I need to be there for as long as I'm allowed to go. Turns out it was 3 months for a tourist visa, and I want to just immerse myself into that American living. So I did. I flew over on the day before Halloween, and this was on after September 11th. Like that happened in September 11th. And I flew out October 30th. So when you fly out from Spain to the United States, you lose a day because Spain is 8 hours ahead. And that was Halloween day. And so I thought, what luck. I get to come right on a holiday that's super American. And I'm just going to have a blast. Life is good. And so I come in and sure enough, my parents arranged for me to stay with three different families. The first family, the dad was the missionary that back in the day brought the gospel into my dad's life, which was really neat because I got to get to know them better. The second family was a companion that he had in his first mission. And it was so fun because they had kids my age. And the third family was someone that he served with as well. And so there I was, planning to hop every month from one home to another to another. In the meantime, I do realize that all that living, all that culture, all that mentality just called me. I just was born to be an American. And I don't know why in the world I was born in Spain, because it made no sense. To me, I needed to be an American and live here. And experiencing Wendy's Frosty with fries, to me, was bananas. And I thought, no, no, no. You have a dessert and you have a food, and that's not even a real food, and you mix the two of them. Are you crazy? But then it was the tastiest thing in the world. And I thought, man, these people have some things figured out. It's just so fun. The whole thing, I was in like, wow stage. Everything was exciting. And I loved immersing myself into the everyday life. And I was a tourist, right? So I didn't really get a feel for the heaviness of having a job and responsibility or going to school just yet or anything like that. I was basically just watching and tagging along. So I go back home. I worked for 2 years. I did some modeling jobs, and I also worked at a supermarket, make sure that I was replenishing the shelves. And in 2 years, I was able to save to come to school. Being an international student, I was expected to pay $4,500 per semester. And I was determined that I was just going to do it, whatever it took. And so when I was 21 years old, 2 years later, I had earned a student visa. And I decided that I wanted to go to Weber State University. And that one of the families that I spent a month with was willing to take me in until either I got married or I was able to move out on my own. And they were happy to do that. And for that, I'm very grateful because it is already a big change culturally and at all levels, emotionally and mentally, to move from one country to another. But also that I didn't really speak any English, and I found out really quick that I didn't when I thought I did. I really was humbled quick. So, and I was just grateful to come into a home where they had family prayer and they had family dinners and they had family dynamics. Well, the minute I set foot off that plane and I landed, and I was already scheduled to get a driver's license for the first time at 21 years old, which I was the first one in my family generation, women, to get one. And that felt so scary. And then I had appointments to go and register for school and to find an on-campus job. The minute I set foot off of that plane, I suddenly felt the rush. Like, my goodness, everybody feels like they're starting to walk faster than what I'm used to. They're talking a lot faster, and everybody seems busy. It was like busy bees everywhere. And I told myself, but I didn't see this when I was here 2 years ago. What changed? But reality really hit quick. And now knowing that it was up to me to show for it and work hard and come and get done what I, you know, came here to do, just really settled in very quick. And so I left back the Mediterranean diet and walking everywhere and anywhere. Good weather outside most of the time, so that meant more time outside and spent outdoors. And a lot of herbal remedies and herbal teas when you felt under the weather. And a lot of the human connections when you ate, you didn't eat fast. You stayed at a restaurant for 2 to 3 hours and you connected and you got to know each other and you reminisced good experiences and whatnot. So nothing felt rushed when you ate. However, I pretty soon felt into the rush of eat your food quick because the waitress or the waiter is waiting for the next person to come in so they can make money, and they make money off of your tips. So the sooner you get done eating, the better. And convenient foods seemed a lot more budget friendly and a lot quicker than me fixing my own meals like my mom, my grandma used to do. And it just seemed like a better idea to save my money to continue to pay for school semester after semester. And so I started eating fast food and convenience foods, and I didn't really get to walk anywhere because now you drive everywhere. And so that whole American lifestyle surely just got me to a really sad point where I got really, really sick. And looking back, I can spot when I would be getting sick and the times that I would be ignoring symptoms like debilitating migraines, where I would just have to sit upright with the lights off in hope that I could fall asleep, or not being able to fall asleep and conceive sleep on my own, or feeling like my body ached, but I didn't really work out and my hair was falling off and I didn't understand why. And I felt a little bit more irritable when before things didn't really faze me as much. And my mindset started to become negative because I was really stressed and I didn't quite understand how to keep up with that level of stress and demand. And so I had my first daughter. Well, I got married.
Yeah, you got to go back to that.
I got married. Yes. So 2 years after I moved to America, I got married, and we happened to meet 2 weeks after I came here. Now, it was kind of a big funny thing altogether, because I am trying to do sign language to this really tall, blonde, blue-eyed guy that I thought, what? He's actually got good height. Like, I could even wear my heels and be good to go. Like, not a problem. So I thought, this is real. Like, how fun. And he's really funny. And one of the things that I wrote on my little young women's journal when I was 15 was like, he's got to be funny. And he's got to be adventurous and sing really well. We're working on the singing, but everything else seemed to be working as I have always imagined or hoped for. And he was blonde and had blue eyes. And I thought, what? This is a typical American person. Like, this is it. Life is good. Let's figure out how to, you know, get this guy pinned down somehow. I'll use all my tricks. But it was so fun because dating was really fun, and he was quite adventurous, and he was involved in the student government at Weber State, which made it so fun because he was a part of a lot of activities and a lot of gatherings and humanitarian and community service projects. And so that was really good for me to actually see that side of things that young people wanted to be involved with, and how good of an experience that felt like having, and the neat people that you met along the way. And so we ended up getting married in the Salt Lake Temple, and it was kind of hard because leading up to it and having had to go through a lot of paperwork with immigration, where we were trying to get married in Spain, that really wasn't working, and we were ready to get married. We were almost engaged for a whole year by the time we finally got married. My family, just being the oldest, I think they were learning that it was not about tradition, but it was about what we wanted to do. So I remember that my dad decided that they were not going to come to our wedding. So thankfully, Ryan's parents went ahead and paid for everything. And the American family that I was staying with was so gracious that they allowed us to have our reception in their backyard, and they were so helpful and kind and so neat. But I remember waking up that morning and feeling like, I don't know, this is how it's supposed to be. I don't know that not having my family here is going to feel like the right thing to do. And again, that voice of a human that was never present said to me, you're meant to do this, and it is going to be a very peaceful day. Trust. And I thought, who just said that? And I thought I just imagined it in myself, but throughout the day, I kept thinking back as I was getting ready to go into the sealing room, and I just thought, wow, I actually think that reminds me of that experience that I had back in Madrid when I was 18. And you know what? I was told by very many, and I felt to myself, that that was the most peace we had felt in that sealing room and in the temple experience. And I didn't have any of my family there, but I didn't miss them that day. And it was a wonderful day, and we had a great time. And I was just reassured when I really needed it, because it was a really big step in my life to do. And it was happening in my dream temple, the temple that I had been watching at General Conference on TV in Spain at the Stake Center. It was that very same temple, and I was so excited about it, but I just needed that reassurance so my heart could enjoy what was to come. And so it happened again. I didn't see anybody, but I could hear them very clearly, like I'm speaking to you right now. Well, we have our first daughter, Aubrey. She just turned 17, And then I remember wanting to get pregnant with my second daughter, Ava, and everything ended up being okay. But now looking back, I was already displaying some health issues that I was pushing away or ignoring because I had no time to pay attention to it. I just fell into that conveyor belt of what's next, what's next. Let's go, keep going. And so I thought I was going to miscarry her the first trimester because I had some bleeding happening. And I remember my OBGYN saying casually, oh, don't worry about it. A lot of women do have a little bit of that happening in their first trimester, but I think you're going to be just fine. It'll be okay. Don't worry. I will see you next time you come. Sure enough, after I got out of my first trimester, everything went well. I ended up having her. And even though it took about a year to conceive her, which was unusual because with Aubrey, it happened right away, I thought, well, you know, I guess that's just how it goes. So 2-3 years after having Ava, I am realizing that those symptoms are ever getting even more intense, to the point where now I feel like I could take a nap almost every day after lunchtime, and that I was constantly having eye tweaks and really bad migraines to the point where I would have to pull over if I was driving because I could not keep on driving. And then my joints starting to hurt. And I just thought, my goodness, did I just maybe walk a little much or did I sleep funny? What's going on? Well, it's time to continue to expand our family. And I took a really long time or so it felt to get pregnant with my son, Talmadge. And the first trimester was really rough because I did have a subchorionic hematoma, which means that you have a little bit of a blood sac that's placed on top of the placenta, the newly formed placenta, and there is the risk of that subchoriomic hematoma to enlarge and push and flush the placenta out, losing the baby. And that was the very first time anybody had ever explained that to me. And I thought, how odd. This is like one in a million. I felt like I had not even heard of that happening to anybody else around me. And a lot of my friends were having babies and getting pregnant and giving birth and never heard of it in Spain either. And so I thought, all right, then what do we do? So they basically said, you just need to be on bed rest and then you'll be fine. So because of Ava's experience, I thought, yeah, you know what? Maybe I've just been so busy and I really need to slow it down and take care of myself, which at that point was a really hard thing to turn the notch down and to bring it down activity level wise. So I did. I spent about 2 months on and off on bed rest, and then the bleeding stopped and I went on to take a trip back to Spain and I had both girls with me. Ryan was to join me a little bit after. And I remember pushing the girls up the hill with the little stroller, because in Spain you have a lot of hills up and down. And I started bleeding again and I got really worried. My mom takes me to the doctor and she said, you need to take some progesterone. You need to do this and this and that. And at that point, I just felt like, oh, this cannot be good. This does not sound good. Oh, I just feel so nervous. So I'm taking it easy while I'm there, and things got better. And immediately after our trip, I came to see a doctor and they said, you know what? Why don't we do a really good comprehensive exam to see how you're doing? And we can find out the sex of the baby. So because I was already feeling a lot better, I had been taking that progesterone and following the protocol and resting, we were excited to go into the doctor's office and find out what the gender was going to be. My husband and I decided that we were going to give him an envelope and have them write down what it was and have a little reveal party. And so we walk in. All of us are sitting down. I take onto that exam bed and She starts doing the ultrasound and her face just drops like something major wrong is going on. And so she gets a little nervous. She starts to scan and do an ultrasound from all angles of my belly. And she basically said, "I'm sorry, but there is no heartbeat." And we were just confused. Me and my husband just looked at each other. We're like, "Well, then find it. Like, maybe you don't know how to work this machine. Like, please find it. I don't know. Like, do you need me to move?" And she said, "No, the baby's passed away." And I was in shock. I had no idea that that happened to people. Number one, that's how unaware I was. Number two, I didn't think that that was what God had planned for me. And it just felt so crushing. And so that day was a blur. I spent going from one ultrasound to another to confirm, to then to find out that it was my son, to then getting scheduled and delivering the baby because it was an advanced second trimester and I needed to go and deliver the baby. It was too big. And that experience was just excruciating painful. It was just horrifying and it was really scary. And we're so grateful that we had a lot of angels on earth that helped us get through the unknown and navigating that process of what was next to do. From getting ready to be induced, to delivering, to after, to holding the services and burying the baby and all the support that came flooding after. And it's like all these friends came out of nowhere and all the support came pouring down. And that just humbled us so much that there was such kindness and angels on earth that were just ready to drop anything and everything to be there for us when we needed it most. And a lot of the times it was just not convenient, but they still showed. And to me, it taught me that I wanted to do that too, if that ever happened to present itself as an opportunity. So after the stillbirth and all of that experience, me and my husband took on to that attitude of, you know what? We're going to try again. We're going to complete our family. We're not going to let this from scaring us into completing our family. This is going to be good for us. We have gained a deeper depth on how our family is forever and how we get to unite with Talmadge one day in heaven. And so we get pregnant again, maybe 6 months later, and everything is cruising along, but then another subchorion hygmatoma happens. And so I follow protocol on bed rest again. And at that point, I'm a little bit farther along and things subside bleeding wise. And so it felt like I was going to be okay. And we found out it was a girl and they told us that the genetic code of the girls are stronger. Therefore, the chances of her passing away was a lot less. And that just gave me all the hope that I needed in that moment to believe that it was going to be okay. And I remember the week before that we went to get a checkup, I had a dream. And I remember specifically this female coming into my dream and letting me know that my family is forever. And she was showing me temples. And I just thought, that's really beautiful, but I don't know how that could possibly relate to me and my situation. And I remember waking up and having that really vivid experience in my mind. And almost like if I couldn't get up and get dressed or fix breakfast for my kids or anything else, I was just striken by it. And so I just took it as I could, and I was almost grateful that that had happened. And I questioned myself, do I not have a testimony of the covenants that happened in the temple? Do I not know this for myself? Why did I need to be reminded of it? Well, me and my husband go to dinner 2, 3 days later, and I remember my belly, my pregnant belly, just dropping low. And I just thought, huh, my baby isn't moving. This is so odd. This is so weird. I'm gonna have a little bit of sugar to see if maybe I can wake her up and get her going. And it just was not happening. So we had this prompting to go back to the doctor. At that point, I'm working with a maternal fetal medicine doctor at the University of Utah because I was considered high risk because of what had happened the year before or 6 months before. And so just like the first nightmare happened where we were told there was no heartbeat, it happened again. There is no heartbeat. And my husband with his fist just like punched the table because he was just like, this cannot be. Are you kidding me? Like, not again. This is just too much. And I had never seen him so upset. And I just broke into tears, like this wailing that you just could not hold back, and this confusion all over again. And suddenly, all that courage that you mounted up months before disappeared quick. And it felt dark. And it felt like there is no way out of that despair. And so, the good thing that we had for us is that we had already gone through that process again of getting scheduled to deliver the baby, to hand it off to the mortuary, and to do the services to bury her. So I remember that second time I noticed in myself, my attitude was different than the first go around. Before, I was a little hesitant for people to help me and to reach out and to chat with me. I really didn't want to talk to anybody. I wanted to hide under my covers and just disappear. It was too painful to even talk about it. But the second time around, I allowed people to come and to help. I didn't really feel as guarded, and I felt like it was okay to talk about it. And I was just so grateful. And so after the services had happened, I just recovered physically the best that I could. I had lost so much blood delivering that they were getting ready to give me a blood transfusion. And I remember that, which I learned afterwards, that when you're in your second trimester, your placenta is still very sticky to your uterus. And so you need to get a DNC done. At that point, I was bleeding so badly during delivery that the OBGYN went and manually tried to clean as much as she could. And that was just so traumatic to me. And I was exhausted. And thankfully, they said, you will be okay. You don't need a blood transfusion. You will recover. So we come home, and it's like the world suddenly just like stopped. And it felt silent. And it felt like nothing was moving around me. There were no colors around me, there were no smells. There were no events. It's like the world just stopped. And so I remember praying, this like really desperate praying. And I basically just yelled at Heavenly Father up. I just looked up and I just yelled and I said, listen, I remember specifically you blessing me with a lot of health and with a family and with children, plural. And my patriarchal blessing, and why aren't you blessing me? Why? I'm a good person. I've worked hard. I've learned the language. I got both my college degrees. I got married in a temple. Why? What else do I need to do? And then this voice came very clearly saying, because you're not doing your part, but I'm here for you whenever you are. And that suddenly just turned on that light bulb. My world suddenly had little colors popping in. I started to hear sounds. I started to have some sense of smell. And it just felt like, okay, I'm ready. Tell me what to do. I'm in for it. I can be sadder than I am. I can hit any deeper rock bottom than I already am. So help me out. I'll do anything. I'm that desperate. So 3 months after that happened, I remembered running the carpool. My girls had preschool and they had end of year fun things to get done. And it was around Christmas time. And suddenly I'm at a stoplight. And I remember I had no way to turn my wheel in my car. Like my wrist had really sharp pain. And suddenly I started to shake. And I just couldn't move, and I got really scared, almost like if I was going paraplegic. And I thought, what is going on? So I pull over, I call my husband, and I said, something wrong. Something really wrong is happening to me right now, and I don't know what it is. He's like, did a spider bit you? Did like something bit you? What's going on? And he said, we're going to the Instacure right now. Let's figure this out. So we go there, they get a little alarmed by my blood work, they send me over to the ER, and they basically diagnose me on the spot with lupus. They said, basically, your body's attacking itself, and the rest of your life will be managed by immunosuppressants and painkillers. And I just thought to myself, you're kidding. I'm 35 years old. You have no idea what I just had to go through. I'm still processing so much of it already. I have two really active little girls at home. No, I can't do that. And they said, we're sorry. This is one of those things that you just live with. And so I remembered a couple of days following that appointment, I kept getting this feeling that no. Lupus is not meant to stick with you. And you will heal. Are you ready? And I just thought, well, crazy or not, I'm ready. And I am willing to do whatever it takes. I will not have this stick with me. So one thing after another, I kept getting these really strong promptings that I was obviously guided through angels that were teaching me and ministering me what the next thing to get curious about was a proper hydration and sleep hygiene, how to nourish my body and how to eat really good meals, and how to change my mindset and find gratitude instead of complaining or having that victim mentality that why me to why not? What is there for me to learn? And healing emotional wounds and processing through those. And I think it was about a year and a half later that I was supposed to go to my rheumatologist. And before I got out of my car, I parked the car and I felt this sense of peace that said, this is your last time. You're not coming back here. And I believed it. I got out of the car and I'm like, yeah, this is my last time. I'm not coming back here. I'm not coming back to the University of Utah. And I believe it. And so I walked upstairs to my room. I see my rheumatologist. The routine lab work was done and drawn. And 10 minutes later, she comes in the room and she tells me how they're very sorry, but they need to redo the lab work because nothing showed in it. And I was like, you know what? You're welcome to retake it, but you are not going to find anything. And I just knew it. I don't know what overcame me. I was speaking with authority and I was speaking from a place of so much assurity and conviction. And so when she stepped out of the room, I was there by myself, and I was sitting in the middle of three chairs, a really small exam room. And you know how you have peripheral vision, but you don't really turn to see, but you know something's there? I had My son on the left, he's a grown-up. And my daughter on the right, and she's a grown-up. And her hair was pulled this way. And I could see that her hair was just pulled back. And they were hugging me. They were leaning towards my shoulders. And I could not explain that. I knew they were there and I could see them. And so I reached over to my shoulders and I just sat there and pondered and enjoyed that because I knew that was going to be my last time being there. So when she came back in the room moments later, she said, "Honestly, Miriam, you've been telling me a lot of funny things you've been doing. But I don't know what you did, but don't come back. You're good. You actually reverse lupus and you don't need to come back. Like, I don't know what you did." And I proudly said, "Well, I know what I did and I'm happy to share." Because there's a lot of different things that my mind and my intelligence and my awareness couldn't have figured that out at all. I was too far onto the other side of things. But I know now that little by little, those ministering angels were telling me, "Well, how about this? What about this? What about that? Why don't you try this? There is more to this." And as I look back, I realized that the order of healing that I followed through that guidance was exactly what I needed in that order in order to reverse lupus within 18 months. And so, for me, it was just a huge testament and conviction that I was never alone, that God was watching for me, that He's real, that He is never a punishing God, but ever a loving God. And when we're ready, only when we're ready, because He respects our free agency so much that He's not going to force us or sway us one way or another. It has to come from us. It has to come from a deep need to want to be guided and to want to be loved by Him. And so I was ready and I jumped on and I'm so grateful. And I remember putting my body into a test to see if I was strong enough. And I remember hearing a friend saying, "Well, I'm going to be running a triathlon. That seems like a fun thing." And I told myself, "That seems like a horrible idea. What? You're putting yourself through that? I mean, you understand what you're doing. You're swimming in the open water. Who knows what's in there? And you're going to bike with a lot of wet clothes. That sounds like a horrible, uncomfortable idea. And then you're going to run on top of that? Maybe in your tennis shoes, maybe in your biking, you know, cleats, whatever." And I'm just like, "Are you nuts? What's your problem?" "And you say you have fun doing this." So I thought, "Well, you know what? I mean, she's swimming, she's biking, and she's running. I mean, you got to be pretty fit to do that and withstand that." And I was like, "You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to go do one of those. I don't know. It sounds like I'm not going to be alone. More people than I realize do them. And oh, it's like a thing." I got a really cool t-shirt and I got a bib and I'm just like, "Oh, this is going to be great." And I gave myself 1 month to train because I told myself, "Okay, I got the green light from my rheumatologist, but truly and really, if I'm healed, my body should withstand training for 1 month and go do it." And I don't know, it might have just come out of complete unawareness that I told myself that that was going to be what I was going to do. But I did it. And I was using my husband's, he's 6'6" feet tall. I was using my husband's custom-made mountain bike. Terrible idea. Terrible idea to bike on the road. I could not get ahead of me or anybody else whatsoever. And the grandmas were passing me and I wanted to scream. I thought, "Whoa, you got to have the right equipment." Noted. But I finished the very last in my age category, but it felt good. And I think I did 4 more of those. And then I realized, "Well, let me do just 1 more. I feel fit. I feel good. I've caught a little momentum, but honestly, this is just inconvenient to train. It's so expensive. And I already know for myself that I could do one of them. Okay. So on the day of my last race, I remember my girls were in the back seat. My husband is driving and I am in the driver's seat and I'm feeling a little nervous. Like I'm feeling uneasy. And I just remember saying a prayer to Heavenly Father and asking him, I'm sorry. I'm going to ask for a sign of some sort. Could you please give me a sign just to know that I'm supposed to do this one more time and that it's going to be a good thing? Can I just seal the deal here with this and be good? And seconds later, it's like clear skies. This is in July, right? When this race has happened. I look out the window and there's this gigantic rainbow. My husband is like, what? I have never seen one of those in Utah and I've lived here my whole life. This huge one. And my girls are excited. I'm just like, I swear to you, I did not see that one seconds before. This is the coolest day ever. So that just gave me that reassurance that I was just going to go in there. I was going to do my best, finish last or not. And then I was just going to be done, call it my last one. Now, the cool thing is that I told my girls, hey, wouldn't it be cool if you guys met me towards the finish line and you held my hands and we all crossed the finish line together? Wouldn't that be sweet? And they were just, oh, of course, this would be so great. They were so little at the time. I think it was like 5 and 8 years old. And so sure enough, I'm just like, you know, for dear life, I'm trying to get through that last little section. And I'm not even kidding. After my girls grabbed my hands, I went 5 times faster. I was like, whoa, like propelling like fast, fast, fast. And I'm starting to pass all these people. And my husband's like, whoa, 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 what got into you? Because he's trying to follow me with the phone. And I was just like, I feel like I don't even know where all this strength is coming from. And then it occurred to me that both my son and my daughter were also pulling me through that finish line, that it wasn't just Aubrey and Ava. And even my girls were like struggling to keep with the stride so they wouldn't trip. And I was trying to keep up with it. My legs were tired and I thought, I mean, I'm 5'11", but boy, this is like, I feel like I'm going to trip if I keep going this fast. And to me, again, they came and showed up for me when I was ready to seal that part of it, to once more understand that I'm healthy and that they were there for me. And so, you know, all these tender mercies just throughout my life, as I contemplated in getting ready to record the podcast, just reassures me more than anything that it is up to us how we get to go about life and how we get to learn about the experiences that come our way. And I know without a doubt that God is going to give us as many opportunities as we need to learn what we're here to learn, to carry out our life's mission, and how we do that with our life purpose. And I can almost imagine a little train coming after another and after another until we're ready to hop onto that train. And I know that God will never give up on us. He will continue to send us those opportunities and he will continue to show us that it's up to us and that there is a greater reward on the other side. And I have experienced it for myself that when I finally grow out of, let's say, a bad mindset or an emotional wound, that it's almost like you get upgraded onto what's next, but that you are built in to overcome it, and that you're finally equipped with everything that you need to continue on. And so if anything, there is so much hope through any trial, through any life experience, because I know that if I decide to have my team with us, my angels, and my Heavenly Father and Christ. And when I mess up, I even get to make it right as many times as I want to. Okay, I'm thinking like, there is no way we can fail. It's a constant positive, a constant everywhere. Wherever we want to turn to, we will find it if we want to. And so if anything, I just hope that I continue to remind myself that in every situation, there is so much good that can come from it. And that gives me hope to work through whatever might come my way. And so I've been so grateful to be mentored throughout the years, for the past 10 years since I reversed lupus, to learn all the things about root cause healing. I root cause healed, not knowing that I did. But obviously, I was meant to learn the ways. And now I'm just ever so grateful to help others that come my way, to guide them through that experience and that hope, and just to present them with whatever resources that help me, because I've been made so good at that it's so hard not to want to share. And I don't know, I just wake up every day so grateful that, you know, God knew He needed to give me 2 stillborns for me to fully wake up and to start living my life mission. And you know what? I'm grateful, because at the end of the day, He knew me best. And so the good news is that half my kids are in heaven. I only have to worry about the other 50%. So I'm thinking like, well, it's not a bad deal.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyways,
go ahead.
Oh, I don't even know where to begin, Miriam. Like, your story touches my heart in so many different ways, just because there's so many similarities through them and through our struggles with infertility. There were so many times that I didn't understand, and my breaking moment was just sitting alone and yelling and screaming at God. And I had that wake up moment too, and that voice, and I knew I wasn't doing enough, right? And we were just in that still of not doing anything. And I think that sometimes, like, God needs us to do more. He needs us to show Him that, you know, we do want it, you know, bad enough. And, but yeah, I'm at a loss for words. Like, obviously I'm just a mess right now, so I'm gonna let Brent take it over. But I just think that the world of you. I want to be your best friend. You're so funny. You did so well. It's like literally one of my favorites. So yeah.
Well, yeah, now we know why you needed to have a funny husband, so that he could keep up with you.
No joke, man.
Thank you.
Your story has everything, and just the perspective that you're able to have and the way that you're able to look at everything. I mean, you did so much teaching in that whole time. You didn't even need us here at all. Not that we do any teaching, but it's just, you know, I like to think I'm kind of smart sometimes, but you have a certain spirituality about you, and you have been able to recognize God and have that relationship with Him in your life. And I know that there's a lot of people listening, or just people out there in general, that don't think that it's possible to have experiences like that, to hear the voice of an angel or the voice of God through the Holy Ghost. And they don't think it's possible they just haven't had those experiences, so they don't think it's possible. Or they've grown up thinking that it's not possible, or being taught that stuff like that doesn't happen anymore. And I have learned that God has so much for us to learn. more than we can even comprehend. And he wants to share things with us, and he wants to teach us, and he wants to help us grow, right? But like you said, he can't help us grow if we're not willing to accept it, if we're not willing and ready to look for him in our lives, if we're not ready to hear the many, many voices that are there for us. He can't force us. Like you said, he respects us enough. He respects our agency, and it has to come from us. And I can just imagine, and I've felt it in my life so many times, that when I'm able to let down some of those walls and quit being such a hard-headed dum-dum, and when I just open up to him and let him teach me, just the amount of joy and the smile that I just know that it brings to his face, because he wants to do all of that for us. And it was just so awesome to see and to hear all of that in your story. And so if there's people out there that are listening that think that God doesn't work that way anymore, break down those walls, please, and get on your knees and talk to him and ask him to help you and to show you and to teach you, because it will happen. I promise. And I just love being able to see that in your story and how humble you are. And I just loved it. So thank you so much for being open and for sharing the hard and the triumph and the overcoming and the learning that you've been through. It's awesome to hear.
Thank you. You're welcome. And honestly, for those that are lacking hope, remember, Satan is real. He's out there. He's out there pestering people, and he's out there to make you so scared that you don't even want to try. But you know what I say to that? Kick him out, because he's not in charge and you're the boss. So you get to decide what you want to do and when you want to, and you get to decide who your team is going to be. So sorry, no chance.
Your kids have the best mom. Oh, they're
Thank
so
you.
Lucky to have you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Well, before we let everybody go, we need to have you share a truth. But because your English is really good, and I don't even believe that you're from Spain.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you share your truth in both Spanish and English. So whatever one you want to do first, please do it. But we would love to hear something that you know to be true.
Thank you. Yes. So the biggest truth that I'll share first in English is that we signed off on our plan of salvation before we came here on earth. And there is a reason why God entrusted us with that beautiful plan of happiness. And I know that each and every one of us are here on this earth to carry out our life mission. And that Christ is the way to follow. When you're feeling lost, adopt that one Christ-like attribute that you feel that can strengthen you. Whenever you feel like you messed up, get back up again. You have the atonement. Use it. It's not just for the people that deserve it. Nobody said, hey, all of you that are awesome and great, go ahead and take advantage of the plan of the, you know, sacrament meeting and the atonement. No way. It's for everybody, anytime, anywhere. And that just gives me a lot of hope that yes, we are here in the latter days. And yes, it's a really hard go sometimes. However, we should not forget that we have all the help that we need and more. And that we came here on earth already built in for these latter days. And so that to me means everything. And Yes, there is no growth in comfort. So we're not always going to experience this beautiful plateau life with not a lot of up and downs because we're good people and we deserve it. Yes, that'll come sometimes. However, I caution people to stay comfortable for too long. That's not good. You kind of be able to just continually stretch and expand and grow. Because like you said, growth never ends and is not supposed to end. We're continuing to grow. We were growing in the spiritual world. We're growing here with our physical body and we're going back for more growth. And so it's a forever thing. And so we have all the help that we need. So if you're feeling lost, or if you're feeling like you can't really go anymore, cast Satan out. Get him out of the picture just long enough that you can get on your knees and you can somehow get close to God, however that feels natural to you, and ask. Because if you don't ask, God doesn't know how to help us. And if you don't ask for angelic help, they respect your free will and choice so much that they can't do anything. Their hands are tied. But if you ask, they're right there by you at whatever time you need it. You just got to be open to that. And so there is so much hope. There is so much good that you can do. And if you can get through really hard things, imagine how many other people around you you can help and you can build and you can strengthen and you can let them know, hey, guess what? I was in a really crappy situation and guess what? I got out of it. If I can do it, for sure, anybody can do it, you guys. I mean, I was a redneck of health and for sure, I thought yoga was the weirdest thing in the world. And, you know, now I love it. I mean, I'm just saying, you just never know. So there's a lot of hope. And then I'm going to share this in Spanish. And my Spanish is from Spain, so I have a little different accent. But here it goes. Nuestro Padre Celestial nos quiere tanto que está dispuesto a ayudarnos cuando lo necesitemos y cuando lo necesitemos. Y tenemos el libre albedrío y Dios lo respeta tanto que si nosotros no decidimos dejar que Dios nos ayude, no nos pueden ayudar. Igual con los ángeles. Si nosotros no queremos ser ayudados por los ángeles o pedimos ayuda, no nos pueden ayudar. Hay mucha felicidad cuando piensas que algo bueno puede ocurrir. Si estás atascado, deshácete de Satanás, porque al final del día, nosotros somos los que estamos a cargo, no Satanás. Nosotros podemos realmente crear nuestra realidad todos los días. Y tenemos la ayuda de Jesucristo, y tenemos la ayuda de nuestro Padre Celestial, y de nuestros ángeles en esta tierra, nuestra familia, nuestras amistades, todos. Entonces, es muy importante que nosotros estemos dispuestos y tomamos esa decisión de decir, no, estoy a cargo y lo voy a hacer. Con la ayuda de Dios, con la ayuda de sus ángeles, porque yo creo que estoy en esta tierra para ser feliz y poder llevar a cabo la misión de mi vida. Así que, tened esperanza y saber que cuando las cosas y la vida se pone un poco dura es porque hay algo ahí que uno tiene que aprender. Y cuando lo aprendes, pasa la siguiente cosa. Pero para eso estamos aquí. Estamos aquí en esta vida y en esta tierra para aprender. Así que ánimo. Si yo lo puedo hacer, todos lo pueden hacer.
Thank gosh.
Now I believe you.
It's getting a little spicy, you know, because sometimes people are just like, oh, but I can't do that. And I'm like, sure you can. Let's go. Come on. Let's get out of this rut. So that's where Satan wants to keep you, in a really tiny, dark room where you never see the light and when there is never hope. But guess what? You're in charge at the end of the day. And so don't even fall for that. Get out of that room, shut that door, and go outside. See the light and fill yourself with people in your life that will continue to remind you of God's love for you and potential, because it's real. We're built in God's image. We are made with all the goodness and all the potential and all the spirituality and all the strength that we need to conquer this world. So let's go.
You need to write a book.
Let's go. We're going with you. All right. On that note, we'll let everybody go. Go find the light.
Thank you, guys.
Go look for those angels.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.